Seriously, who's blowing up my phone?
Oh, yeah. Powerball.
Big news. Powerball now draws 3 days a week. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. Play now. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase player claim.
Morning, Vikings fans. This is Morning Joes, brought to you by our friends at Manscaped.com. Log on to Manscaped.com, use discount code MORNINGJOES, all one word, and you'll get 20% off your next order or your first order. They've got a lot of great stuff. I know it's a No Shave November situation for a lot of guys out there, so once December 1st hits, I think you're going to want to hit the ground running. My cat's actually, the reason that we were a little bit late this morning is that my cat is being neutered. So I actually used one of their products to prep him for surgery. I'm completely making that up, but I figured riffing, it says in the copy to riff, and I'm the king of riffing, would you say?
You are.
Mr. Joe Oberle. By the way, outside of my title of king of riffing, I'm Joe Johnson, your host and the owner of PurplePTSD.com, VikingsTerritory.com, PurpleTerritoryRadio.com, and the upcoming MiniIce.com, a Minnesota Wild site that we are basically launching in conjunction with Jake Jensen, who used to write for The Athletic, and Mr. Seth Tuple, who worked for Minnesota Sports Fan and is the host of The Scoop on KLGR Radio in Redwood Falls. So we're super excited about that. But I'm even more excited to be talking to my friend and mentor in this crazy, crazy business, Mr. Joseph Oberle. How you doing, man?
I'm good. And given the name of our podcast and the namesake of such, I'd like to go right to the prediction segment and go with 306 to 232.
Ooh-ee.
Okay. Had to get that out. Had to get that out. If Joe Biden wins, he'll be the first ever President Joe. So we're kind of psyched about that here.
Yeah, maybe we could get him on the show.
That's it. He would do it. He's that kind of guy.
You know, he actually probably would. Or we could get Giuliani. We would just need like a 15-year-old Russian. I don't know if you saw.
All right.
Did you see the new Borat?
Well, no, but I've seen the clip many times.
Okay. Speaking of Manscaped.
Yeah. No kidding.
It's been a crazy week, man. I mean, the trade deadline obviously was probably what history is going to look back on and talk about from Tuesday, right? There was no other news on, was that the 3rd? I don't think either of us has slept much. I've had CNN and Fox News. Oh. I keep bouncing back and forth. I'm not, you know, we don't get very political on the show unless it overlaps with sports.
Our names.
Pretty much. We're that shallow. You know, I've said this a couple times, though. If there's one thing that rivals football to me, it's political, just everything. I mean, that's one of my degrees is a political science degree. The other one is very similar to political science. It's sociology of law. And so I find it very just interesting, and it's just I always say this. I read about a lot of things when I was in college from 2002 to 2006 at the University of Minnesota, and I remember thinking about certain things that we would write papers about or what have you. Man, am I blessed to live in this day and age. I mean, granted, it was post 9/11 and there was a lot of craziness going on with the Patriot Act, and I wrote a C- paper about that. And then I never understood why people were so surprised when Snowden came out, because apparently I was Snowden first, because I got a C- on the rough draft of the paper laying out exactly what Snowden said like 6 years later. It was pretty obvious to anyone paying attention that that's what they were doing.
I've been Snowden too, but that usually doesn't come for another month yet. Sorry.
The king of riffing and the king of puns. But I remember thinking, during that time, like I'm so happy to have read about these things in books, but I'm never going to experience them myself. You know, there has been some people that have said the last, like, the best time to grow up in American history was the 90s when I was a kid. Granted, I was born in 84, but I kind of came of age in the 90s, and it's kind of been all downhill from there. You know, our generation is probably going to be the first one that doesn't do better than the generation before us. But the things that we are seeing, removing your political leanings from one way or to the other, are historically crazy. I mean, just to have a sitting president come out and kind of have this cognitive dissonance of stop counting here, keep counting there. You know,
Okay.
the best way to explain it really was when he came out yesterday and said, you know, I've been saying for months that mail-in voting is fraudulent and it's awful. And then 2 seconds later he goes, by the way, all these mail-in votes, like they're 80, like they're all for Democrats. Like, what are the odds? They're all heavily Democrat.
Hello.
That's a sign, right? That this is fraudulent,
Hello.
80%. And it's like, yeah, because you told your base that literally would lemmings off a cliff for you that it was a
Not to do
fraud,
the,
therefore
yes.
not to do it. And so that, I mean, it's just, I don't know, I don't understand, really, you know. And again, we don't get political, but I do feel like this is a very historic time. It's worth mentioning. I think that he is playing with fire. I think that he's shown time and time again that he cares more about his reputation and his ego, and maybe staying out of prison, than he does about things that conservatives claim to really care about. These people that walk around with laminated constitutions in their pocket but don't bother to read it beyond the Second Amendment. You know, this is awful. What is happening? There's zero proof of any sort of voting irregularity. The only thing they can come up with, there's been two examples, both are on the Republican side of things. There's been Republicans burning ballot collection boxes, so on and so forth, because Trump tells them to. And I'm not saying
Okay.
both sides are perfect, but I'm astounded that we're living through this right now.
It's crazy times. But hey, the Vikings beat the Packers.
And here's another sign that things suck in 2020. People were mad about that.
Know they want the sucking for Lawrence or the losing for whoever, Dealey Bob. But yeah, I mean I'll even cop to a little bit of it too, because a week ago, I was texting with somebody during the game, my brother, and I just said, you know what? I want the Vikings to get a nice high draft pick and a quarterback for the first time in decades. And I said, but I want to win this game first. And
Yeah.
they did. It was great to see. I mean, I've been around long enough that the Packers are our rival, and they are to be. Doesn't matter what the situation, a Viking fan should want their team to beat them, you know. And especially since it had been three in a row, and Zimmer hadn't beaten LaFleur yet, and Rodgers has had a smug look on his face all season, so
He is the
it
most
was
smug quarterback I
joyous.
think I've ever seen. That's the best way to sum up why I dislike him so much. Outside of the fact that he pulled the Trump himself after the Vikings game. This is how you know it was a great game. He essentially said that he th when they okay, so I'll preface this by saying I'm not a Packers fan, obviously, but in this sense, that was pass interference. It
Yes,
just
it was.
was.
There's no question.
I'm not going to
Yeah,
pretend
the
that it
pick,
wasn't.
how they picked up that flag, I'll never know.
You know, and
I'll never know.
Rodgers basically said that somebody called in from New York and told them to pick up the flag to punish the Packers, which I wrote an article about this on Purple
He knows about
PTSD.
that how?
Exactly. Based on what? That's why it's very Trumpian. But the article I wrote was, there's so many layers to this, and it's really too bad because he doesn't need to. He's just a. It hurts
No.
his legacy to be such a bad, sore loser, and it's very tone deaf for the guy who plays for the team that, when they were looking at changing how holding penalties were called on the offensive line at the NFL, what's that committee called? Like the new rules committee. I think it
Yeah.
was Dungy and someone else, maybe Belichick, but like they did a PowerPoint, and it was like 12 minutes of examples, and 10 minutes of it were the Packers. There's been seasons recently for the Packers where they've had 10 to 12 game stretches with zero holding calls. He benefits from those calls. Not to mention
He does. They have a good
when
offensive line, but he definitely gets plenty of breaks on the calls. There's
you
no
know,
question.
and when Anthony Barr tackled him and broke his collarbone, which A, he'd already broken the collarbone on the other side. B, that was a, nobody will ever convince me that that was not a completely routine, clean hit. It was above the knees,
it
below
was.
The head. He was a runner at that point, by the way. He was out of the pocket. He goes on Conan O'Brien, and he cries about it, and the league creates a new rule for him and to make that sort of hit illegal. They love him. They want him to succeed. He's one of the poster boys of the entire league. So for all of a sudden for you to say the league is trying to, like, risk its entire reputation and business model by waiting for an opportunity to text a ref, it's just – it's so
– yeah, because they want to – they want to elevate Kirk Cousins. He's the new face of the league.
You know, he's can you imagine? I would love nothing more than for Cousins. No,
the leagues do that. I used to work for the Timberwolves, and I was the editor of their game program, and I had to battle with my higher ups to make sure that we put, you know, the Timberwolves were so bad during my tenure that, you know, you couldn't sell any programs when you had to go all the way down to the 12th man and put him on the cover of your magazine for a game night program, and the guy wouldn't even get in. So I started putting on, you know, Michael Jordan when he came to town, or Charles Barkley, or someone else. And you get so many complaints from people saying, why aren't we promoting our players? Because they're not any good.
When
and
did
they
you,
won't sell.
When did you work? When was the last year you worked there?
I worked from 94 to 2000, and okay. I was during KG's tenure, and I missed out on the. I mean, I left right before they went to the Western Conference Finals, but
yeah, because I was thinking like one of those years around there, they had like Irvin Johnson, not Magic Johnson, but Irvin Johnson, the 50-year-old center, and then they had I think his name was Oliver Smith, and he weighed like 600 pounds.
Smith, but I know who you're talking about. Yeah,
he was a big dude. Like, what was that guy's tractor trailer? And I think they solely brought him in to hack a shack.
He was also buddies with KG too. That was the reason why they brought him in. KG liked. I think he went to Michigan, didn't he? Tractor trailer and
yes.
And they had built some kind of relationship. So I think that was one of the reasons. But my point is, every league does it. Every league. Knows where their bread is buttered, knows how their money is made, and especially in the NBA when you only have five players on your team on the court. But the stars of the league are going to get that treatment. Michael Jordan did. Aaron Rodgers is going to be going down as one of the top five quarterbacks in history, maybe, if he keeps going for long enough. But he's already there. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. The league knows that it's a quarterback-run league, and they're going to try to protect him and try to keep him happy. But maybe they also know that he's on the way down, so they can pick up that flag and not have to hear too much crap. But I don't know. I'm not on a day like today going to log into all the conspiracies going on, because there's too many going around in the political arena. So it's all BS. And
yeah,
I'm
you
not
and I
gonna...
mean, we have to drive down to Georgia to vote again, I think. So, I think his name was Oliver Miller, actually.
There it is. Yep, I knew it was Oliver.
Those were just great times. I really used to be a gigantic Timberwolves fan. Were you there when Rick Rickert got punched in the face by KG?
Nope, I was gone by that time.
That's one of my favorite stories of all time. Anyway, yeah, I mean, it was a great game. I mean, we really should – I mean, it's late in the week, and I know people have dissected this game six ways from Sunday, but there's kind of an interesting article on VikingsTerritory.com right now from Reed Johnson of Purple Rain News in regards to Dalvin Cook's day, and I think the title's like an unpopular opinion about Dalvin Cook, and it's something that I've felt and I've mentioned on radio appearances this week. You know, obviously he is playing at an insane level right now. I think he's the first player in NFL history to score four touchdowns in the first four possessions, so on and so forth. But are you at all concerned that they're giving him the ball too much?
I hope not. I just made a trade this week for him in my fantasy league.
I did too.
So.
Right when he injured his groin. But I mean, oof.
Did you play him on Sunday?
Yes.
Attaboy. No,
and
I just
I lost
got him
by 2 points.
Oh man, I just got him this week for Claypool and Zach Moss. I gave up for him, and I'd been trying to get him all year just because
that's
knew.
That's all you gave up for him?
Yeah, I know. Kind of nice, huh?
I just picked up Zach Moss off of waivers last night.
Oh, I've had him for a while. I've been watching him, and he finally had his best game last week. He had two touchdowns, but I figured he was going to get up there sooner or later. So I've been kind of holding him on a low, and this guy went for it And, you know, I've been kind of getting them all here because I knew the Vikings were going to be a running team. And, you know, I have Thielen on my team, and I almost gave him up because it's like they're just starting to go away from him with Justin Jefferson and Dalvin Cook, and his stats were waning. But that's beside the point. Dalvin Cook is, am I concerned that they might give him too much? He had 30 carries last week, which is relatively rare, and he's like one of only four Vikings that have ever had 30 carries in the game. Like AP's had a bunch of them. I think Chuck Foreman did, and maybe it's only three. I can't remember. Anyway, yes, I guess a little bit from a Viking standpoint, from a fantasy football standpoint, feed that man. But he's already shown that he's, you know, somewhat fragile. He's going to break down, you know, one way or the other. So yeah, you have to limit him to a certain degree if you want him. If you're looking ahead to the playoffs, which you know dang well Zimmer is, despite their 2-5 record, you want Dalvin at that time. They had to set him down at the end of last year to get him ready for the playoff game against the Saints. So, yes, my answer to that question is yes. It's you don't want to do that too much. But, hey, he sure is fun to watch, isn't he, Joe?
Yeah, he's a – it's revelatory. Revelatory. He seems to be getting better every year. And it's beyond just his talent at this point. He truly is like the heart of this offense. He is the MVP of this offense. Everything goes through him. I think that's almost single-handedly last weekend he turned things into Vikings fans and people who cover them in the media going from being about as down as you – the most down I think we've been during the Zimmer era by far after that Falcons game, and turned it into a situation where people are essentially talking about the Vikings making the playoffs. And a lot of that goes through started with the conversation of maybe, just maybe, they found a formula that they can replicate throughout the rest of the season at a mm-hmm. high success rate, with which is, you know, feed – Dalvin the ball, and then, you know, have Cousins be the Ryan Tannehill / just game manager.
He's going to have to be better than that, though, because they're going to load the box on Dalvin. You know, more week, he might get one more week here of grace period, but then they're going to start treating him like Adrian Peterson they did all these years. And Adrian was, I think, a little bit stronger and a little bit built a little bit better, where he can take that beating. And so that's a concern. So you're going to have a Cousins that can really, can feast on them if they do that. Because it's coming. It's coming. If not this week, it's coming soon, I think.
You know, and I definitely think that, and then we talked about this last week, but I think there's some revisionist history going on with Cousins, because me and Sansevier earlier this week, because I guest host his show on Tuesdays, and he's been doing the show remotely. And usually when I do it in person, we do two or three segments. But the last couple of weeks, I've been doing it over the phone, and he's got a lot of guests lined up, so we only do one segment. But essentially, I earned, quote-unquote, a second segment because we started getting into it about Cousins. And his point was that we need to keep Cousins to, like, 10 to 15 throws a game. Nothing more than 5 yards down the field.
That's not true.
And I was like, first of all, yes, he's had some bad he's had a lot of interceptions, but three of those weren't his fault. Maybe four. You know, there's two Hail Marys. There were two that bounced off receivers' hands. One was behind BC Johnson, but whatever. Yes, he's having a bad start to the season, but he had 6 interceptions last year. He's the second most accurate quarterback in the history of the NFL by a full percentage point, and he's never been. These aren't Sam Bradford types of things where it's behind the line of scrimmage. He goes downfield and he's incredibly accurate. A. B. Why would
you may remember Stephon Diggs, for crying out loud, when he was here?
He was the biggest deep. He had the most catches over 40 yards last season.
I know.
And though he wasn't, Diggs wasn't a huge yards after the catch guy. Nowhere is Thielen or Justin Jefferson at this point. I mean, Thielen is more of a possession guy who just has a gigantic catch radius, but he's not going to break some Randy Moss type screen pass you know what I mean? And so why would you limit your offense in that way? And that would indirectly,
if you don't
directly hurt the run game too.
I was just going to say, if you don't have the threat of that downfield ball, they know how to play you. And if they can just shorten the field and sit on those short passes, you have to have that threat. And I think they're developing it with Justin Jefferson. I hope they are. But you have to have that. You have to have the ability of your quarterback to do it. Now, I will go so far as to agree with Sansevier if he's saying that the Vikings' offensive line doesn't lend itself to a big downfield. You know, they can't protect. I don't know if he said it or not, but I would say.
No, his point was that Cousins is a nightmare and he'll just throw picks. It wasn't the line.
It's not true.
I would agree with that, too. Outside of last weekend where they played it really
are
well.
Truly a great, right now, I would have to say, a good to great offensive line for a run game. They got a back who's got great vision, who is quick and smooth and knows where to go and can get there and get to the second level so quickly. So they work well. I mean, they're young. They can get out there and even get outside the pocket and do some downfield blocking for them as well. But they're not a very good pass blocking offensive line, and unfortunately that's going to fall on Kirk, so he has to be able to find a way to have that downfield threat at the same time as not get his head taken off. So he's got to be more than a game manager. I guess I'm going back to what you were saying earlier. He has to be the threat of more of a game. If he's just a game manager, the defense knows what to do with him, and they take half the game away, and you might not. I mean, the Packers' defense against the run is terrible. They showed it last week against the Vikings, and they showed it last night, you know, for a while with Jerick McKinnon. You know, they were not good. McKinnon didn't go nuts, but, you know, there's plenty of holes in that. Not every team is like that. Some teams are good against the run. What are you going to do then? You better have a threat of a pass, or you're going to be. How many games did we just see an eight in a box just ground down Adrian Peterson, and we sat there with our chin in our hands and said, well, I guess we're not going to win today.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, outside of Russell Wilson, the best pass play action, there you go, quarterback in the NFL is Cousins. And they are perfectly suited right now to run a ton of play action stuff.
How about that screen, Joe? That screen.
I know.
Was that a beauty or what?
You know, you're right. I mean, the offensive line is a really good run blocking unit, and obviously that's something that they put more
emphasis on.
Yes. But I think part of my feeling of, you know, I was asked this, I guested on Load the Box, one of the podcasts on our network, which is really great. It's on Wednesday nights at 5:15 live, and then Sunday during postgame. Whether or not I thought they'd make the playoffs, and I said I think that the hole they dug was too deep. I think the NFC West is too good.
I agree.
You know, and I think the NFC South has a couple good teams as well. But that if they are going to make a run, it's going to be because the top three PFF graded players for in the Packers game, even above Dalvin Cook somehow, were Riley Reiff, Ezra Cleveland, and Brian O'Neill in that order. And there's an article by Dustin Baker, who's one of our senior writers on Vikings territory right now, that essentially is saying, are the Vikings a left tackle away from having a good offensive line suddenly? And I do feel that, you know, it's only his second game, but he had such a good second game, and Ezra Cleveland, that he might not be the left tackle of the future anymore. He might be either the right or left guard of the future. I would love for them, and I don't like to tweak this too much because I get, you know, we've talked about this a lot, the TJ Clemmings syndrome, but, you know, he's obviously more accustomed to playing on the left side. That's what he did in college. He seems to be picking up the right side as a guard quickly and well. But if they were, when Elflein's able to play, if they bring and they flip Cleveland back to left guard and then they bring Elflein in at right guard, the position that everyone says he's his natural and most comfortable position was guard, but not left guard, right guard. And, you know, you keep a guy who I think has been unfairly labeled as a bust in Riley Reiff. You know, for the next couple seasons, even you have something there, or, you know, you could use a first round pick on a left tackle next season. But I think if we continue to see Ezra Cleveland play, especially at left guard, really well, you know, we could have a Steve Hutchinson situation for the next 10 to 15 years. Brian O'Neill's young, Garrett Bradbury's young, and he's been improving. Elflein is still under 30, and he could hopefully figure that out. Or you can always just find someone like Josh Klein. It's not hard to find a right guard. It's the cheapest spot on the entire line. Suddenly, I mean, you and I have talked about the offensive line every show basically since we started this, right?
And you have not talked so positively about them.
I know. That's like it's an interesting circumstance, and so I really believe that, you know, if they are able to even have a mediocre line from a pass protection standpoint with the talent around Cousins, again, this team really could do things that they really need them to do. I mean, I'm segueing into something, you know, because I do like to give I like to hold myself accountable and kind of admit when I'm wrong or give credit to people that I was taking credit away from or blaming weeks ago. I think Zimmer deserves a mountain of credit for what he's been able to do with this.
I think you're drunk
defense.
With the election results, I can't.
Who are you and what have you done with Joe?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, they were down to their seventh corner on
Sunday. Yeah, they're going to be the same this week, too.
Yeah, I mean, they picked up guys that Zimmer literally was like, well, I guess we'll find out if they can play or not. Like, they've been on the team for 2 days. And then, you know, then, of course, because we're the Vikings, one ends up with a punctured lung, the other one almost dies, and Cameron Dantzler. And now we're in the position where they sniped some guy off of the Raiders practice squad, who I guess is really unpolished but talented. He's not going to play this Sunday. But
you might have to, or is it COVID?
A COVID thing, yeah. But
Joe,
what's
the old Zimmer line? Can never have enough cornerbacks. But go ahead.
Yeah, I guess it's panning out to be true. But I think that the fact that they are so thin at corner is kind of forcing Zimmer to do things he otherwise would not do. More blitzes, more exotic looks, maybe doing more zone than man-to-man, getting our elite safeties in to help. And I think part of that has stymied guys like Aaron Rodgers. Granted, the wind was like 100 miles per hour, but Russell Wilson really had a hard time looking at what Zimmer was showing. And I think that, man, it makes me think, like, wow, when we were completely loaded, like, position by position on defense, imagine if Zimmer would have played this way, which is essentially playing more to win than his label of playing not to lose. He just is taking risks that I haven't seen, and
you can do that with a 1-5 team though too.
Of course.
You know, and the other thing, the Packers didn't have Aaron Jones, which was shown to be a difference last night. That guy is pretty good as well, and
yeah.
So there are little caveats. They had, you know, and their offensive line got healthier, I think, this week. So they weren't a full squad, but the Vikings so thoroughly outplayed them.
Yeah, I think like Thursday or Friday last week, 39% of Packers players were either limited in practice or did not practice.
Right. Well, I'm not gonna, can't add too much to what you're saying about Zimmer. I'm glad to hear you say it, because I've always been a Zimmer Bobo, and I know he has his faults, but I think that he's a good coach, and especially on the defensive side of the ball, and for us to see him put this patchwork secondary together last week against one of the greatest quarterbacks in the game. He's going to have to do it again this week because the Lions are a pass first team with Stafford. You know, Stafford is on the COVID watch, but it sounds like he's going to be able to play if he passes all his tests between now and Sunday. So, you know, they're going to be tested again. And, you know, I just read for coming on that Holton Hill and Mark Fields and I want to say Dantzler were not practicing, which shouldn't be a surprise. One of them has a punctured lung. The other one got about his head knocked off. So so they're going to have to be scrambling again. And, you know, it was to the Vikings' benefit that the offensive line and the running game had such a fantastic game. I mean,
yeah.
So dominating. You know, they kept Rodgers off the field. I mean, they answered his scores with scores of their own and just, you know, kept the foot on the gas. And now maybe Zimmer learned something from that. I mean, like I said, you can play a little bit looser. You can take more chances when you're 1-5 and you're not supposed to win. And you're playing in Lambeau with a team that is pretty dang good. But I will also say the Vikings came in either loose and ready and fired up, and the Packers overlooked them a little bit. I seem to think, and I, you know, you're going to hear me, you've heard me preach about that before. Emotion in this NFL is a huge factor to who wins these games. And I've got, you know, I'm a little concerned coming in this week with Detroit, who's, you know, 3-4, I believe, and they're Detroit. We've never considered them like, you know, the Packers or one of the best teams in the league. So the Vikings could have a letdown, emotional letdown. So they better be ready. They haven't even, they haven't won one game yet at U.S. Bank Stadium this season. So
yeah, that's a little strange. I mean, the home, obviously the home field advantage is different.
Yes, it's true.
But yeah, I think that the game, I mean, just to put a bow on the game plan thing, it just, you have to almost be perfect though, because I think they're doing these long methodical drives to keep some of these offenses off the field. Yeah. But you have to make sure when you're doing that, that you're scoring touchdowns and not field goals, because then you can get in a situation like we've seen where they have dominated time of possession, but they, you know, are only up by, you know, 13-6 or something. But yeah, going into the Lions game, there's obviously a few interesting caveats to this game. Matthew Stafford is on the COVID list, but it sounds like he's getting cleared today and is going to fly to Minneapolis and will be able to play on Sunday, even though Matt Patricia's kind of being Zimmer-esque and not really saying what's happening there. I think Kenny Galladay's not going to play. But there's going to be a few Vikings on that roster, I think all three of which have a chip on their shoulder and want to beat the Vikings very badly.
Goodbye.
You know, we'll start with Everson Griffin, because I wrote an article about that, I think, yesterday. And I, you know, I'm not him, so I can't speak for him, obviously. But the way I work in things is intent, right? Like, did Zimmer intend to offend or hurt his feelings or diminish his impact by saying he was a good player for us? No. So to act hurt by that, I think, is disingenuous, my personal opinion, obviously. I think that he was more upset about the way things ended here, and he was looking for something a way to express that. That didn't seem maybe about money or the fact that he's not on the team anymore. And so, you know, there's that. But also, again, I can't speak for him, and he's a very emotional guy. But I think the last thing the Vikings need is an Everson Griffin or an Adrian Peterson really gunning for them. And I saw AP post on Twitter that he's been 0-2 since he's left the Vikings against the Vikings, and he wants to change that. And then you have Curse, who hates the Vikings for reasons I do not understand. They didn't do anything to him. You know, they didn't cut him after he got caught with a gun drunk and driving around a construction zone.
He probably just didn't get enough reps that he thought he deserved or something.
He doesn't
know.
Really fit anywhere.
I know. Is he getting any in Detroit?
I don't think so. Not from what I've heard.
I haven't heard his name much. I forgot where he was until this week rolled around.
I mean, they definitely could use him, and I liked him because he could fill in at three different spots if they needed him to, and that's amazing.
And he's a big, tall guy, and he made a huge play for the Vikings in a game last season, I believe.
I think it was the Broncos' the fourth down when they tried to score a touchdown at the end of the game. Yeah. Noah Fant, Iowa.
I'm going to give a little benefit of the doubt to Everson, you know, that he was legitimately offended. But, you know, you got to consider the source, Ab. Come on. Does Zimmer gush about anybody other than Aaron Rodgers?
He called
his
corners kindergartners this week.
Yes, you got to consider the source. And he's just, you know, did Bill Parcells, you know, go out there and just lay it on as thick as soup for, you know, on his players? No, and that's the school that Zimmer comes from. And it's like he's saying he's a good defensive end. He knows in his heart how much better he is. And Everson does know how much Zimmer loves him. Now,
yes.
I would love to see Zimmer come out and say, hey, come on, Everson. You know what I think of you. And you know, he better be ready for a fired up Everson Griffin. You know, now has Griffin lost a step? Sure. You know, I mean, Dallas didn't even hang on to him. As soon as they started cutting bait down there in Dallas, they let him go, you know, because their team's season ended. So, I mean, there's something about that. But, you know, Everson also left. You know, Zimmer was counting on having him back here. He might be a little bit hurt, too. Because of Everson Griffith leaving, they had to go out and sign or, you know, trade for Ngakoue. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of hurt feelings in there. So you can't, you know, you can use whatever you want. Go ahead, get online and talk about it. That's fine. And she said he a very good player or something, a little, you know, get an adjective in there. Yeah. Or an adverb. I can't remember what it is. Yes. And, adjective. He would have been nice. It would have been nice, but who cares?
I seem to remember some of my earliest memories playing hockey as a child in Minnesota. Our coach is saying some pretty, in retrospect, very aggressive things to us when we'd be losing, you know, throwing
no.
water bottles around, using expletives, using, you know, homophobic slurs at times, and it just seemed like that's what's normal.
Let me tell a quick story. My coaching my kid in hockey, he was 10 years old, and we got beat pretty bad, and there was three of us coaches, and after the game, I ran into somebody going to the locker room. I sat there and talked, and by the time I got into the locker room, they're all sitting. The whole team is sitting around in the locker room with their heads down. You know? And I get in the car later as we're driving, and I say, "So Seth, what did the coaches have to say before I got in?" He goes, "Oh, you mean the speech of shame?" I said, "Okay, you say no more." Exactly, you know. So I mean, that's the idea. You're supposed to be like this. You're supposed mm-hmm. to rail on your, you know, and it's wrong. It's wrong. But you know,
that's
I don't
why
know.
Tice retired, right? He said that he can't coach some of these guys anymore.
That's why. No, that's why Bud Grant retired. I know that. That was part of it.
That was Tice's quote too, though. We talked about that when he came on the podcast. You know, and we had Bryant McKinney on the 3 Deep with Wobby show. He essentially was talking about that as well. The league's completely different from even when he retired, and how these guys, especially with social media, are kind of their own little brands, their own little businesses. And, you know, it's hard to deal with guys like that that have, you know, millions of followers on Instagram and are making all this money and, you know, are grown men. And so it is different.
Yeah.
You know, but I do think that Zimmer what he does for the most part comes off as endearing to these guys. I you know, I don't think Anthony Barr or so, a lot of these guys were taking pay cuts to stay here.
Until this
Barr,
year.
Cause he was really rough on Barr, early in his career, you know? You know, the only thing I can really think of that I vehemently disagreed with Zimmer on, and it's not his fault really, was how rough he was on Sharif Floyd, coming back from that surgery.
He made a mistake there. Zimmer, I think, made a mistake there. I mean, you know, they all didn't know what was going on, and, you know, it was nerve damage in his knee, and he probably said some things he regrets. I don't know that, but, you know, I agree with you on that, Joe. That's a good point.
Do you – there's a lot of articles going around comparing Dalvin right now to vintage AP, 2012 AP.
Two different facts.
That's literally like the almost exact verbatim what I was going to say. It's really hard to compare, you know, because we don't see a lot from Dalvin. We don't see those, like you said, some of those delayed. It's almost because AP would almost not wait for holes to develop, and then he would bounce off the back of the line himself and cut it back like the complete wrong way.
Get out of my way!
Yeah, do that head bobbing thing when he was really going. Like, we don't see a lot of, like, as quick and fast as Dalvin is, I don't really consider him to be a threat to house things on every play the way that AP was. But at the same time, he's more, I don't think he has as many negative yardage plays as AP did.
Yes,
and I also
think
he could be on the field for three downs more often than AP can. And also he doesn't, he's not also not, it's a 50-50 thing with AP. Either he's going to house things or he's going to fumble. Which has always been a very strange concept considering his handshake. I don't think it's a really fair comparison, but I mean, if I had to take one versus the other, that's a very hard thing for me because like you said, AP at times had 8 or 9 people in the box, but still carried this team, you know, in 2012. Then he came back from that ACL and basically changed the way that guys try to come back from ACLs. A bunch of guys tried to copy him and couldn't do it. But I don't know. I mean, if you put a gun to my head and said choose one, I guess I would go with – I don't know. I would probably go with AP because he's more durable. But I do like the fact that Dalvin is more of a threat in the passing game and more of a three-down back, I guess.
You know, I think the thing that separates him is his durability. And after his first season, or was it his second, that was Dalvin Cook's concerted effort he made in the offseason to bulk up. And he did. I mean, I remember seeing him. I mean, it was first to second season. I go, oh, my goodness, I was down there. And he had put on some, you know, physical armor. And – you know, that's a good thing because he's, you know, since that time, he will take on a hit, you know, in the secondary from somebody else. He won't just run out of bounds. He'll put his nose in there. I wish he wouldn't, but, Because I don't think he's as strong of a physical specimen like Peterson, but I would agree with you. You know, Peterson is wonderful to watch. I enjoyed watching him. It was you know, give me the ball. It was almost, you know, Alexander Mattison like on that play. I'm going to take the ball. I'm going to run into that hole and ram through it anyway and get through it. Where you got more of a Chuck Foreman finesse coming with Dalvin Cook, where he's going to look and dance a little bit and then go. And I definitely like his pass catching. I don't know off the top of my head without spending a lot of time on film work to see who's the better pass protector. I want to say it's Dalvin, because mm-hmm. AP was never very good at it and just wanted the ball every play. But right now, at this stage of the career, obviously Dalvin, but that's a silly thing to say. Overall, you know, God, I got to see a little bit more Dalvin. I got to see
a couple say the same thing.
Seasons where, you know, everybody criticized the hell out of Kyle Rudolph because of his fragility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you look at his career in total now, it's kind of overblown. He had some early years where he struggled to play a whole season, but since then he's put like four or five together.
And he avoids, and, I mean, he goes down knowing that.
Yes, he does.
I can fight for two or three more yards and then raise the risk of my injuries, or I can be on the field, you know. And he gets guffed for that, but that kind of brings up a follow-up question.
to finish my point, I want to see a little bit more out of Dalvin before I can, you know, and I would like to see him have a 16-game season and be durable. But anyway, okay, go ahead. Nice.
The Rudolph thing, because what we heard a lot about from AP when he was young was, man, he really got, you know, because he would lower his head and go into some of these sideline hits, you know, and really blast the defender. And a lot of the time they're like, this – you know, it's fun to watch, but he's not going to be able to keep doing this. You know, just step out of bounds, man. Like, why are you blasting these guys and making them pay? And so I guess he does deserve a lot of credit, because he's been outside of, you know, the year he missed with the ACL, and then obviously he missed time because of the child abuse thing. He's been incredibly durable, considering what a physical guy he was. I mean, mm-hmm. he really made guys pay for tackling him, and he never went down easy. And it'll be fun to watch him. I feel,
and that's not Dalvin. You know, that's not Dalvin.
Yeah. No, it isn't. You know, and for a while, especially with AP, initially when he was in Washington and not getting a lot of time, I was hoping that he wasn't just playing because, and I don't mean this in a pejorative way or anything, but you know, he has a lot of kids, You have like what was that corner Cromartie something from the Jets that had like 14 kids with 12 different women, and he essentially had these huge contracts, but he went broke because of child support. And I didn't want AP to kind of be the old broken down horse who was playing because he had to, not because he wanted to. And I don't know for 100% either way, but I feel like he's playing now because he loves the game still, and he wants to cement his legacy, and he wants to maybe catch Emmitt Smith, even though that would take, you know, a couple more seasons of like, you know, 800-900 yards. You know, he could have done it had he not been injured or missed that, you know, essentially 2 years in his prime. But I think in that regard, with his legacy, I mean, the things that he's been able to do at his age, still 100-yard games, teams are still, you know, having to check for him from a defensive scheme standpoint. I mean, he's really showing people that he's one of the greats by what he's been doing, both in Washington and now with the Lions. I mean, it's going to be really fun to watch him come back, and I'm sure he'll get some extra carries early in the game, when like he did with the Saints. But yeah, I think it's just it bears mentioning that he's just really, you know, showing that, man. Almost like Emmitt Smith, you know, Emmitt Smith, when he went to the Cardinals, he's still very, you know, he's good at what he does, and he gets people the yardage they need, and he's lost a step, obviously, but he's still, you know, the wily veteran, you know?
I would say it's all three of those things you mentioned, love of the game, love of the money, and Emmitt Smith, you know, love of the legacy, I guess. So I think that's why he's still playing, and you know, he can still do it. At some point, you're going to every player reaches the age where they said, you know, they probably get sick of waking up every Monday morning and just, you know, feeling that train wreck that they were just in. And those other things start, you know, taking the, away from you and you decide to leave. But, you know, if he needs the money, yeah, there's no better place to get it than the NFL. So,
yeah. And Sam, a real quick follow-up question too. I need to start watching more old school Viking stuff because I said something relatively hyperbolic about Dalvin Cook maybe being the best running back the Vikings had had on Sansevier's show, and he was like, wait, you gotta, you know, Chuck Foreman, you know, revolutionize the position. Robert Smith too, we talked a lot about that. But I don't know a whole lot about, to be completely honest with you, full disclosure, Chuck Foreman. You know, I haven't seen a lot. I haven't even really seen a lot of his highlights.
There's a lot of people. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, every Vikings thing I go to, I run into him.
Yeah.
He's omnipresent. Talked to him a bunch of times. Super nice guy. But, yeah,
He was their, you know, big back in the 70s for him, you know, like kind of hand-in-hand with Fran Tarkenton. And they say a lot of us Vikings fans from back then point to Jerry Burns' offense as the forerunner to the West Coast offense with the short passes to the backs who could then, you know, take it and run with it. And Foreman made a career out of it. I mean, he was so good. I mean, he had spin moves going on in midfield that would just blow you away and they were just a blast to watch, you know, to avoid hits. And he was so quick and agile. And, you know, that's what Sansevier, I think, is talking about, you know, revolutionizing the position, making it a really pass catching position, more so than just a ground and pound like Bill Brown was for the Vikings before that. So, yeah, there was a lot more finesse to his game than you saw in the NFL back then. And wish they could have won a Super Bowl with him. It's too bad they didn't.
Yeah, that would have been great. I would love to. I really want to somehow watch some of those older games because
that's great stuff.
You know,
Fran Tarkenton was amazing.
My dad always talks about he grew up in a household without a television, strangely enough, and he had to listen to the Vikings on his little radio from Radio Shack, and he remembers vividly when the Vikings got Tarkenton back.
Yep, and so do I.
It reminds me of when we got Randy Moss back, and I was so excited. And that ended.
Joe, I still remember the title on the cover of Sports Illustrated when they got him back. It was "Scramble Back to Deep Purple." Was the I remember to this day. I saw it in the library, like seventh or eighth grade. I can't remember how old I was, but you know, I was like, "God, Tarkenton's coming back!" And that was him. He was the scrambling quarterback, and it was it was a huge deal. He's fun to watch too. Those two guys. I mean, Chuck Foreman's a little bit later. It's probably the end of Tarkenton's career. They were together in the 70s, and they were fun to watch.
So I found at Half Price Books this mint condition May to June 1972 Football Digest, Pro Football's monthly magazine. With Tarkenton on the cover in a Giants jersey, and it says Tarkenton on the spot. I'm going to be giving it to my dad as a present. He'll probably hear about this when he's listening to the show at work. But, yeah, it's. I'll take a picture and post it in the article so people can see it because it's really cool. But, yeah, I think that we should get into, the predictions for the game this weekend. It's hard to say, you know, because for whatever reason, Stafford and these Lions, if any team has really had Zimmer's number in this division since he got here, it hasn't really been the Packers or the Bears outside of playing the Bears in Chicago. It's been the Lions. You know, they've always been a tough opponent for them, even, you know, when Zimmer and the Vikings really had their all-out really great rosters. And, you know, I don't know what it is particularly about the Lions. I don't think Stafford necessarily plays lights out against them, but you know, it's division games are hard to predict. This game's going to be hard. We have no idea really what's going on at cornerback. I do think the Vikings will end up winning this game. I think that Kenny Galladay not playing will really help. I think, the offensive line is trending up. I think we're going to see more from the passing game. Justin Jefferson's been a little quiet these last couple weeks. They didn't make any moves at the trade deadline. I think that was kind of a sign that either they believe that this team still has a shot or that, the season is looking more like a one-year growing pains thing than a complete 2 to 3 year teardown. Either that or they just didn't like what the rate of return they were getting for some of their guys. But, they still have Kyle Rudolph, still have Irv Smith Jr. I think that this offense is really humming along, and with the offensive line again trending up, I think that we're going to see more of what we've seen in the last positive games in Seattle and Green Bay. And so I think the Vikings are going to end up winning 34-16.
Wow. You like that defense, huh? Okay.
Ball away from them. Lots of blitzes.
Yeah. Before I go to my prediction, I should probably recap what happened last week.
I'd rather not.
Well, we both were way out of base. It was probably our worst game of the season. I mean, I was 20 points off total, and you were 23. So
not too bad.
Yeah, and so I upped my lead to 24 points over you. Nice. So you got to make up some ground. I mean, you started out that after the first game, you were 25 up, and I whittled it back to all square.
I was going to pull a Trump and stop counting. First week, it said, "Let's is over."
And a good idea. The Lions are probably not as bad as their record. I guess their record is probably legit, but they are a team that's on the upswing. I think they're getting better. Like you mentioned, I didn't realize Kenny Galladay is not playing. That is big. He's a heck of a player. They don't have much of a running game. It's all Stafford, who's a very, very good quarterback. I think I'll just say he's a good quarterback, and I hope he doesn't get it. I think it will be a battle. Home field advantage means nothing this year. I was thinking someone on Purple PTSD should just, dive into that and see, what.
That's so weird, because I literally, when you just said that, I said, that's a good article idea in my head.
It is, because, it would then inform when they do get fans back in there how much it means to teams. Yeah. I mean, I would love to see somebody really look at the statistics and see what they are. And my biggest fear is a letdown after that big game last week, and that they played so well, and Dalvin winning the offensive player of the week, and blah 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 blah. So I mean, it's just like after the Seattle game, they had a huge game, but they should have won it. And they had the big letdown against the Falcons after that. So it's good that it's Green Bay. This is the soft part of their schedule coming up right now. They can make some hay here and actually get back in the conversation with that extra playoff game. So I'm going to be bullish on them. I'm going to say they're going to win two, but I'm going to say I think the Lions will give them a run for their money. They seem to. Everybody they play against, they come back in the fourth quarter and make a game out of it, and then like do a Lions thing and lose it. But so I'm going to say Vikings 30-27. So
okay. Oof.
There's some difference there for somebody to make up some points.
A nail biter.
And to reiterate again, I'm going to go 306-232 in my other prediction for Joe. Go Joe. Go go Joe. Go. So
I'll say 269-269.
Oh, God, house, killing the smalls. You're the killing
house,
me.
The house decides it in that instance. And who runs the house? Yeah, they do. The Senate finds the VP. So I think we would have a split White House for the first time since the Founding Fathers days. That would probably end in a duel a la Alexander Hamilton and
Aaron. Oh, my God. It would be Biden and Pence. There'd be flies buzzing around their head.
What if it was Biden and Trump?
Oh my God,
that would be the best. This has been Morning Joe's for the 6th of November. Everyone please check out manscaped.com. Our discount code is Morning Joe's, all one word. You can find all that information in the article on Vikings Territory about this episode, or if you go to Vikings Territory Purple PTSD, just click on one of those banners, and I think the discount code is built into those links, so you don't even have to remember or write anything down, which is the best way to go about it. We will be back next week on Wednesday. I want everyone to take a second, and depending on where you found this show, keep an eye out on our Minnesota Sports podcast and YouTube show site, Purple Territory Radio. We have multiple new shows launching in the next couple weeks, both for the Vikings and for the Minnesota Wild. One was Lines and Wines, or Wines and Lines, which is a Minnesota Wild podcast with Seth.
I thought it was about drugs.
That's what they said, that they used to get that all the time. That is now called the Mini Ice Podcast. Mr. Tyler Hagg, who used to host Bleeding Purple, is actually back, and he's going to be doing two video shows for us. We just launched a show called This Means More, like This Means War, that is about NFL rivalries. The first episode had a Vikings fan and a Packers fan from the UK that run a really great website about some soccer team over there. And so we got a lot of cool stuff going on, so keep an eye out for that, because video stuff is really the next step we're taking in our business. Thanks everyone again for tuning in. I just found out that our show, Joe, is a top 200 podcast on Chartables.com, which is insane.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah, well, it dropped from like 198 to 236 last week, but that's, I think, it wasn't updated because we did the show later in the week. But yeah, I got an email from this company that has been they said your show, we've noticed Morning Joe's is gaining lots of popularity. Here's a transcript of your last show, and if you want to pay us for transcripts so people with hearing issues can follow along with the show. So they sent me a sample transcript, and it is hilarious. I gotta forward it to you.
You because, do. I'd love to see it.
You know, it's the way that I speak, I think, broke their algorithm.
And then they got all these where Joe Oberly interrupts Joe Johnson, yeah. Interrupts him again, and interrupts him again, and interrupts him again. So
it's all for it was a good it was a good chuckle. But that I guess that's a good sign. So thanks everybody for tuning in. We love doing this show, and we're hoping to bring it to even a larger audience. And so it means a lot to us, guys, because we've been plugging along, man. Not many people have been doing a podcast as consistently as you and I have, so that's worth mentioning as well. Nice. We will check in with everyone next week. Let's hope for a win on Sunday. Skol.
Seriously, who's blowing up my phone?
Oh, yeah. Powerball.
Big news. Powerball now draws 3 days a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. Play now. Please play responsibly. Must be 18 years or older to purchase player claim.
Me, but also you. The Pharaoh fast forwards his favorite foreign film. Powder donut. Okay, what's my line?
The only line I see here on the script is get options based on your budget with the name your price tool from Progressive.
Oh man, that's a tongue twister, huh? I'm sorry, I'm gonna need a few more minutes. Bulbous Walrus, the Bulbous Walrus.
The name your price tool, only from Progressive.
The owl ran afoul of the comatose coxswain.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.